WMFO Medford. Unlike milk, long-distance telephone calls, and library books, there's no due date, tolls, or expiration in the grand hour. Good morning. It's the 1st of March, 2023. I'm going to start things off with something I found, November, maybe? Adventures in Research. This one's called Hurricane Maker. Had an original air date of the 22nd of October, 1946.
Adventures in Research. Hear that? Sounds kind of scary, as though some prehistoric monster was growling, ready to tear you, a human pygmy, limb from limb. But it's nothing like that at all. It's merely science at work, creating a man-made hurricane. This is Paul Shannon introducing another in the series of programs dealing with the thrilling adventures to be found in the field of scientific research, as told by the men of science themselves. And here, ready with today's story, is Dr. Phillips Thomas, research engineer of the Westinghouse Research Laboratories.
Thank you, Paul. Hello, everyone. You know, when you stop to think about it, this is a wonderfully scientific age we're living in. If anyone has any doubts about that, just cast your mind back to a matter of 10 years ago. Just imagine being at an airport 10 years ago and hearing this over a loudspeaker.
Passengers to London, flight number 612, 612, now loading at gate 6. Gate 6.
Hey, that's my plane. Well, goodbye. I'll drop you a cable when I arrive in London. Only takes about 16 hours flying time, you know. Goodbye.
Flight 114 from Paris, just arriving at gate 12. Flight 114 from Paris.
Chances are that had you heard that 10 years ago, you'd have had serious doubts about your hearing. But today, such announcements are hourly occurrences and are taken for granted.
Oh, sure. Transatlantic and Pacific flights are regular things today. I guess you might say that the age of flight has arrived at last.
You really think it has?
Oh, sure. All we need now is more of what we've got in the way of air transportation, and we're all set.
That's all right for now. What of the future?
Well, the future can take care of itself, I guess. Planes will get bigger and faster, that's all. And we'll all go right along with them. Take them in stride.
Mighty good thing for you that science is on the job to worry about the future for you, Mr. Shannon. Today, one of the big issues before some of the nation's best scientific brains concerns the airplane of tomorrow, the mammoth of the skies that will be bigger, faster, more revolutionary in design than any since man first mastered the theory of flight. If you were out west, at a spot some few miles south of San Francisco, and could tag along with a small group of visitors making a tour of inspection, you'd see men of science experimenting with a giant machine that creates hurricanes for testing airplanes.
And now, here's the building you're most interested in.
My, what a huge building. It's tremendous.
Almost 1,000 feet long. And inside that building is the world's largest wind tunnel.
Anybody working in there?
Oh, sure. Work goes on all the time. There's a great deal of experimenting to be done and not too much time to do it in. So the work of testing goes right along.
Well, can we go in and see what's happening in there?
Of course. Better stand back a bit while the doors are being opened.
My, just look at the size of those doors.
King size, all right.
Well, pretty nearly everything is king size here. Has to be that way because all of our tests are man-sized jobs. Used to be that wind tunnels were pretty small affairs compared to this one, but then they were designed to test models of planes. All right, we can go on into the tunnel now. This way, please.
My, I've never seen anything like this before. Why, it's tremendous.
Tremendous isn't the word for it. It's huge.
Certainly makes a person feel small and insignificant, doesn't it?
Standing here in the lip of this tunnel and looking down toward the other end, hundreds of feet away, gives me the impression of looking down the throat of some huge prehistoric animal, magnified 1,000 times.
Looks like the small end of a funnel down there, doesn't it? Say, what's going on there in the middle?
Oh, that's where they're testing. Now, watch your step, please. We're headed that way.
Look, you see it up there? It's a model of a plane.
Yes, it looks pretty tiny, almost like a toy.
It isn't a toy, though. That's a full-size plane. It only looks like a model to you because your sense of proportion has been twisted out of shape by the hugeness of everything else around here. But suppose we head for the observation platform now where we can watch the test.
It's an odd-looking airplane, isn't it? I've never seen one like that before. Why, it hasn't any wings.
Well, it's a new design they're testing for stresses and strains. It has wings, all right. Look a little closer there. You'll see that they're folded about halfway back.
Well, for goodness sake.
The planes you'll see in this wind tunnel are not the planes you'll see flying around in the sky outside. You see, these are tomorrow's planes, new models of the future, being tested for safety and practicability way ahead of time.
I see. No wonder that one looks rather odd. Plane wings usually stick straight out from the fuselage, but these are folded back. Looks almost like a big dart headed for a target.
I imagine there's a lot of money tied up in that plane just the same and in all the others.
Thousands of dollars. Invested by any one of a dozen plane makers.
What are those men doing under the plane? They look like pygmies in this tunnel, don't they?
Well, they're scientists. And they're checking the plane from every angle before the big test. They're checking the guy wires, the supports, making sure that everything's in order.
Last-minute checkup before the test, huh?
That's right. A few minutes more now, and you'll see a sight you'll never forget.
And what exactly are they looking for in the test?
Well, in this particular case, we want to know what happens to those half-closed wings when that plane is hit with winds traveling at 750 miles an hour.
750 miles an hour?
No more, no less.
But man, that's almost suicide, isn't it? Speed is speed, but 750 miles an hour.
It may sound like speed to you, but to an aviator, it's something more.
How do you mean more?
I mean that up in the air, the flyer runs into a barrier, a wall, pretty much like one you could ram into a car doing about 90 miles an hour.
Yeah, I see what you mean.
And this wall, as you call it, is your problem, is that it?
Basically, yes. You see, flying at a speed of 750 miles an hour or thereabouts, planes run into what are called shock waves.
Uh-huh.
The leading edge of a plane wing is actually pushing air ahead of it.
Something like that blunt-nosed boat of yours pushes water ahead of it, Bill.
That's the idea, yes. But at 750 miles an hour, and at just about the speed of sound, you know, anything any blunter than the sharp edge of a knife starts to have real trouble.
Sure, it wouldn't be able to push air out of its way fast enough.
So the airplane is bumping its way through the air.
Well, it's actually bumping the air itself. Something like you drive an auto down a nice, broad highway at about 90 miles an hour and nudging the car ahead of you at about 100 nudges a minute.
Oh, heavens. I can just imagine what would happen to my car. It would probably jolt itself to pieces.
Exactly. Well, that same thing happens to a plane. The wings begin to shudder, and then they start flapping at the tips. And then suddenly the winds literally snap them off the body of the plane.
And if that happens when you're up around 10,000 feet, oh, brother.
750 miles an hour, you probably only have a fraction of a second to bail out.
Yes, and even if you could make it, the wind at that rate would tear you to pieces.
Well, all this information has given me a brand new appreciation of the work you're doing here. I've always been under the impression that safety begins in the sky. But I can see that the real safety measures begin right here in this wind tunnel, your safety laboratory.
Well, science wants to know how it can make a plane fly faster than sound. And this wind tunnel may help us find the answer.
Well, how about these planes, like the one you're going to test? Are they the planes that we'll take to the skies later on?
Maybe, and maybe not. Depends on how they operate under the test. These particular models that we test here are built as nearly perfect as possible. As perfect as care and engineering skill can make them. But they're built for test purposes only, and believe me, when they go through this wind tunnel test, they've really been through the mill.
I guess most of them break into pieces under the terrific strain, don't they?
Most of them, yes. Which is exactly what we want, because then we can investigate and find out why they broke. Well, I see they're just about ready for the big test now.
All clear in the tunnel. Stand by.
All clear. Let her go.
Man, oh man, just look at that plane, will you? It's a full-size plane, and yet that wind is tossing it around like it was a cork almost.
No wonder they break up. Seems to me nothing on earth could stand up under that battery.
And yet those planes are specially built to stand up under it if they can, and at terrific speed, too.
And all this is just so that someday we'll be able to travel through the air at the speed of sound, or faster. That day must be a long way off, I imagine.
Maybe not as far off as you think. It may come in your and my lifetime. New York to Los Angeles in something like 2 hours.
Goodness. Imagine.
All right. Cut more news. Wait for the all clear, everybody, before entering the tunnel.
Well, I'm glad that's over. I was beginning to feel sorry for that poor plane being battered that way. Just look at it.
We'd better not go down to where the test plane is just yet. The scientists are checking up on the damage done. And that's too important a job to interfere with.
One thing I'm interested in is, what are other problems are there to be solved in these tests? Besides speed, I mean.
Well, there are a great many problems. Traveling through the air at terrific speed can be quite an experience, you know.
Kind of breathtaking.
Well, more than that. It can be something like being tossed into the pit of a blast furnace going full tilt. Don't forget, the plane of the future will be flying high above the stratosphere where there are temperatures of around 70 degrees or more below zero. And yet, in spite of that, tomorrow's supersonic planes will have to be built with a precise, exacting refrigeration system.
Why will they?
Well, it's all a question of friction. The friction of the air, you see, sliding over the sleek, streamlined body of the plane, heats it to extremely high temperatures.
Say, I never thought of that.
Neither did I. There'd be a tremendous amount of friction there.
Well, according to calculations and tests, at around 800 miles an hour, the body exterior of a plane may reach a surface temperature of 400 degrees Fahrenheit.
In that case, your plane of the future, traveling at that 750 miles an hour speed, will have to be a flying icebox.
Something like that, yeah.
What about the controls on a plane traveling at that speed?
Well, that's another problem, also being worked out. At the speed of sound, or thereabouts, the controls in a plane exactly reverse themselves.
Uh-huh. Makes it quite a problem in itself.
Yes. But by using wind tunnels, such as this one, science can, and eventually will, solve all these various problems.
However, this wind tunnel is only a testing ground. Such a plane has to get the final test when the plane is actually flown by a human being in the sky.
Well, that's true. But that kind of test is coming too. We've about reached the end of our experimental rope here, and the time is coming, close now, when a test pilot will do that very thing. We'll actually fly one of these planes of the future just to give it a final okay.
Well, he can have that job. I wouldn't want it.
Nobody has ever flown that fast before, have they?
Well, there have been a few isolated cases in which test pilots got planes going at terrific speeds in the past few years. At least it's believed they were going 700 or so miles an hour. But in all cases, the planes were diving toward the ground.
That's pretty dangerous, I'd say.
Yes. The few pilots who survived such experiences reported that their plane was completely out of control. They bailed out before the planes reached the 750-mile-an-hour limit.
Well, we'll be keeping an eye open for news. A test pilot has flown as fast or faster than sound.
And if the test flight is a success, well, it looks as though we're in for a new age of flight, the super speed age.
Yes, and thanks to these experiments with radio-controlled models and wind tunnel tests, and to the men of science who conduct them, A new age of super speed flight will be safer for the men who do the testing in the sky, and for you, who will travel swiftly to the far corners of the earth in those planes of tomorrow.
The story of the Hurricane Maker was told by Dr. Phillips Thomas, research engineer of the Westinghouse Research Laboratory.
Yep, that was Adventures in Research. I forget what they just... I forget who Doctor Who that was. But that was Hurricane Maker. It's an original air date of the 22nd of October, 1946. This morning I'm going to go ahead and revisit our old friend Jack Webb. It always seems like there's something, another technical difficulty. But this Jack Webb program is Johnny Madero Pier 23, I believe it was his second radio drama. I forget, I did all my homework a couple of nights ago anticipating the snow and ice, so pardon my ignorance. This is Johnny Madero, Pier 23. Title of the program is Who Is? This had an original air date of the 19th of June, 1947. My name is Arthur, and you're listening to 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org, Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio. Thanks for listening.
You know, the only time San Francisco really gets hot is when a tourist calls it Frisco, and then it gets warm enough to give a sleigh dog a southern accent. Down around the waterfront, they don't care so much, and for a buck, you can insult anybody but Joe DiMaggio. The piers stretch out like a big yawn from south of the ferry building clear to the China docks. You pushed over on one side so you won't notice about the same spot you'll find dust in a bride's parlor. You find Pier 23. From there, it's a short skip to Johnny Madero's boat shop. My place. The sign outside looks honest, but down here, the only sign people pay any attention to is rigor mortis. I rent boats and do anything else you can blame on your environment. It works out all right. But pretty soon word gets around and you got a reputation. And it doesn't pay to argue, because even if you're leveling, you make as much headway as a whistler with a split lip. I found that out last Wednesday afternoon. I was looking out the window watching the tide come in when somebody in back of me coughed. When I turned, Nat Finley was standing there in the office. He didn't say anything for a minute, and you noticed his eyes were as soft as the inside of a woman's arm. They had one of those faraway looks you couldn't follow with a road map. And then I saw the rest of him. He wasn't flabby, but he was on the way. And you got the idea he was an ex-fighter who settled down with a restaurant.
I got the right place, haven't I?
If a woman screams you haven't, what's on your mind?
That's a good question, Madero. That's a good question. That's what I want you to find out.
Look, fella, maybe I don't even want to be friendly. What's on your mind?
I don't know, Madero. I don't know.
All right, you convinced me. Now back out of here and we'll both be in the dark.
Wait a minute, Madero. Listen to me. My name is Nat Finley. My wife and I live up on Knob Hill, and I've been retired for a while, see? And...
I don't, but go ahead.
Well, you got to help me, Madero. I'll pay you $50 a day to help me.
At that price, it won't be help.
I want you to find someone for me, but I don't know who or why yet.
We're back to that again, huh?
Oh, listen to me. Lately, a name's been ringing in my ears. Just a name. Pete Sucho. Pete Sucho. Over and over again.
So you read it somewhere.
I don't know where I picked it up. For the last week, the name Pete Sucho has been on my mind. It's a nightmare. You got to do something about it, Nadal.
Change your diet. That might help.
I want you to find Pete Sucho. Find out who he is, where he is, why he's bothering me. If you do, I'll give you a $200 bonus.
Look, Finley, is this a job or a career? There must be a dozen Sutros from here to Jersey City.
Maybe, but the Pete Sutro I want lives right here in this town. He's got to.
There's a law?
A listen to me. Last night, I kept hearing the name Sutro again. Only this time, there was an address, too. It was care of General Delivery, San Francisco. So he's got to be somewhere in this town.
Why don't you check the phone book?
I have, and the city directory, too. But so far, I haven't been able to locate him.
Then I will, huh?
Well, if you don't, you're still getting $50 a day. What are you worried about?
That $50 a day? It might turn out to be a dream, too. You better throw in some advance money.
Sure, Medell. I brought a check along, just in case. Will $100 cover your doubts?
Yeah, if the bank can cover your check.
If they can't, you don't have to do the job. That fair enough?
Mm-hmm.
Will you start looking right away?
Yeah.
But you got to be careful, Medell. My wife's never to know about this, understand?
Why?
Because, well, she doesn't like the idea. She thinks I'm a little crazy looking for a name like this. She hates me, I think. She thinks I'm crazy.
Don't worry about her, Finley, until she starts mixing your nightcaps. For $50 a day, I'll chase anybody's dream. Because with that kind of dough, you're rich enough to run down a couple of your own. When Finley left, I called the bank and found out his check had solid backing. So I went down to Lofty's and I put out some feelers on Pete Sutro. It didn't take long before one of the boys came up with the lead. A couple of other people were looking for Sutro, too. One was a guy named Marty Keene. The other was a torch singer named Evelyn Day. The word was that Sutro and Evelyn used to trade mash notes in Detroit. Well, I phoned the Jade Club where Evelyn was working, but she wasn't due for an hour, so I decided to give Marty Keene the first try. He was living in a motel out in the marina, so I went out. There was a sign outside that said Modern Cabins, but you knew Abe Lincoln did better in Illinois. The cabins were the size of an upper berth with enough holes to start a punch board. I didn't leave much privacy. You had more chance of keeping a secret from Matta Harry. I asked the manager where Kane's place was, and he pointed to the end cabin. I went over and knocked on the door. Kane opened it and glared. His eyes were the color of Saturday night on a week-old jag, and he was so chunky you figured he'd be harder to move than an icebox through a basement window.
Who are you?
My name's Madero, Johnny Madero.
Don't rhyme with anything. What are you looking for?
A guy named Pete Sutro. I hear you got the same idea.
So you got ears. I'll invite you in.
I can't turn you down.
Yeah, that's what everybody says about this gun. Now sit down, you get me nervous.
Put away the gun and we'll both be calm, huh?
After you tell me what you know about Sutro.
I'm tracking down a dream.
Yours?
A client's. You sound anxious. What's your pitch?
A wild one. Just say he owes me some dough and I need it bad now.
You got the muscles, take in laundry.
I'll put you through the ringer first. I want to lead on Sutro.
Yeah, we both do, but I'm not going down on my knees.
Get up, Madero. I don't want to make a liar out of you again.
Yeah, you're tough, Kane. I'll bet you got your dandruff scared stiff.
Yeah, and I'll start on yours now. What's Sutro to you?
$50 a day. A guy named Nat Finley hired me to track him down. Does that make you happy?
No, just ambitious. Who's Nat Finley?
He came in and paid me to find Sutro. He said the name was giving him nightmares.
Sounds like a bedtime story, Madero.
Well, if you don't like it, jazz it up. It's the truth.
I read the wrong papers. Give me another version.
All right, if you don't believe me, Kane, make up your own. Here's Finley's check. Can you read?
If you'll help me with the big words. Give it here. Nat Finley. Nat Finley. You weren't lying. Looks like a good check. I'll take a chance. I'll cash it for you.
It's giving you ideas, huh?
Yeah, and the first one's about you. Here's your dough, Madero. Now get out. Get out quick.
Oh, you're too good to me, Kane. Suppose the check bounces.
It won't, Madero. Because I ain't going to cash it.
Oh, I couldn't figure it. Kane looked at the check and smiled like a guy who just learned all about the atom bomb. I walked out. The only thing I knew for sure was the demand for Pete Sutro was big enough to start a business boom. I headed back to my apartment to see how much lip I could bring down with an ice bag and a little pressure. When I got there, the door was open and the light was on. Inside, things looked even brighter. A brunette was draped over the couch like she paid the first installment on it. She was about 25, with a pair of legs that would have made a silkworm turn over and write a fan letter. She wore a tan business suit, and the way it was rumpled up, you knew office hours were over. When she saw me, she began to vibrate like an alarm clock at 6 a.m.
Good evening.
I won't argue, but you got the wrong room.
Will I regret it?
I don't know you that well.
Oh, you'll catch up with the crowd. My name is Sheila. I'm Nat Finley's wife.
You should be somebody's wife. It cuts down on the risk.
I want to talk to you.
Go ahead. I'll try not to stare.
Let's have a drink first, Mr. Madero. Maybe it will cloud your vision.
Yeah, and the issue, too, huh?
You serve strong stuff, Mr. Madero. Soda?
I'm all charged up now, lady. What's on your mind?
I have a problem. Maybe you can help me.
Maybe it's too late. I'm listening.
It's about my husband, Nat. He tries, but he can't hide much from me.
I'll bet you have the same trouble. Look, lady, you're working too hard for a scene. If you've got a point, make it.
All right, Mr. Madero, we'll skip the intermission. My husband saw you tonight and sold you a wild story.
Yeah, but it paid off. So far, I'm not complaining.
But I am. I want you to drop the whole silly job Nat gave you.
You're not building a case. $50 a day buys a lot of hangover, lady.
You don't understand, Mr. Madero. My husband is a sick man.
Yeah, I know. He can't sleep at night.
He has a large imagination, and it's been getting worse lately. He, dreams up things. Sometimes I think he's a little crazy.
Maybe it's a hobby. He can afford it.
There are some things even he can't afford.
Yeah, like finding Pete Sutro.
That's right, Mr. Madero. There is no such man.
A guy named Marty Kane will give you odds.
Who did you say?
Marty Kane. He cashed in your husband's check. Do you know him?
No. No, I never heard of him.
You don't sound so sure. Marty was talking about Sutro.
All right, Mr. Madero, I'm talking about something else now, money.
So far, you're whispering.
Shouting, Mr. Madero, $500 worth. I'll give you $500 to drop the job and forget everything.
All right, baby, you twisted my arm.
You won't let me down, Mr. Madero. Will you?
If I do, it'll be nice and easy. Finley had the kind of a wife you mate with a panther. She picked up her purse and peeled off 500 fish. She wasn't talking anymore, and when she swayed out, you wondered how much night practice she'd given that rumba. Well, I was all washed up with the Finleys, and it felt good already. So did the dough. I felt like a guy whose name was just picked in a chain letter. My mind was free for the better things of life. So I called up a girl out on Van Ness and told her to meet me at the Regent Bowling Alley. I got there before she did, so I started warming up the alley. A few minutes later, it got a lot warmer because Inspector Warcheck of San Francisco Homicide began spoiling my game.
Hello, Madero. It was a nice strike.
You're in the wrong kind of alley, Warcheck. What do you want?
Some pointers. You got time?
No.
I can see how you hold a bowling ball. Now show me how you hold a gun, huh?
All right, Warcheck. What's on your mind?
I was on Marty Kane's.
A guy named Pete Sutro. He owed Kane some money.
And you paid off?
I paid him a visit. We had something in common.
And you must have bored him to death. Kane couldn't quite stand a couple of slugs in his forehead, so he quit.
Well, what do you want me to do, Warcheck? Break the news to his wife?
No. Just tell me about the argument you had.
It was a monologue. Kane wanted to know where Sutro was hiding. I only knew one answer, so he did all the talking.
Now, you should have said, please. It's not polite to interrupt a guy with a gun.
Look, Warcheck, what makes me the blue plate special?
The motel manager. He said you go into Kane's room, and then he heard a struggle, and then later on he heard a shot.
Did he hear who won the fourth? Listen, copper, a guy named Nat Finley hired me to find out who Pete Sutro was. The name was playing tag in his brain all week, and he wanted to know why.
Yeah, does that sound like a story?
Check with Finley. He's the guy who made it up.
What if he lets you down?
And work on his wife. She's not bad looking, and she paid me to drop Finley's account.
I'll check both your alibis, Manero. In the meantime, I want to line you up.
While you're making the rounds, look up a gal named Evelyn Day. She knew Sutro, too.
Go ahead. Run the police force. Tell me what to ask her.
Forget it, Warcheck. You're not the type. Warcheck stood there for a second, wiping his teeth with his tongue. If he'd done it on the outside, it would have been a contract job. And then one of the bowlers in a tight pair of slacks brushed up against him and went out. He looked at me once more and headed after her. Well, I didn't feel much like bowling either, so I left the note at the desk for the girlfriend and started out. I knew I was in trouble. Some days it's harder to duck trouble than a handful of pebbles. Oh, I told myself I didn't kill Kane, but that was like trying to fight a fire with an anti-smoke law. The big question was Pete Sutro. Who was he? There were other questions. Like, why did the Finley dame buy me off? And why did her husband want Sutro in the first place? Well, there were no answers, and I felt about as safe as an alligator walking through a handbag factory, so I looked up the only good guy I know, a waterfront priest named Father Leahy. I found him in his room flipping through a couple of raffle books.
Hello, Johnny. You're just in time to buy a ticket. The boys' club is raffling off an electric toaster.
I'm already a little burned, Father.
I'm in a spot, Johnny. The boys gave me a quota to fill. I got stuck at a banker's luncheon all afternoon. You know what they're like on risks.
Yeah.
I've got to sell some tickets.
All right, I'll buy a couple, but I need your help. I'm in trouble.
You'd better buy five. At a time like this, both of us can afford to be generous. What kind of trouble?
This won't take long, Father.
You always say that, but it adds up. You don't realize it, but I lose whole weekends that way.
Will you please listen, Father? Warcheck wants to pin me down on a murder.
He's got the weight. Who's dead?
A guy named Marty Kane. I saw him a couple of hours ago, and he was still alive when I left.
Can you prove it?
Well, that's going to be tough. The clerk at the motel saw me go into Kane's room just before he got tumbled.
So far, you don't have a way out.
Why not plead insanity?
I would, but I'm afraid of the competition.
What do you mean?
A muddled-up guy named Nat Finley hired me to chase down the name Pete Sutro. He claimed the name was haunting him.
I know how he feels. Johnny, I don't think the bishop likes me either.
My only lead was Marty Kane. He seemed to want Sutro worse than I did.
Sutro is certainly popular for a dream. Do you think he'll ever materialize?
I don't know, but I don't think Marty Kane was killed over a dream.
If he was, it must have been quite a nightmare. Did you look up your client again?
I didn't have the time. His wife paid me to drop the whole job. She said Finley was a harmless duck with a pail full of wild ideas.
Does the husband feel the same way about his wife?
Do you want gossip, Father, or do you want to help me?
That's an unfair question, Johnny. Either way, I'm embarrassed.
Please, Father, will you check up on a few people for me?
Yes, yes.
Look up Kane's friends, and if you run out of those, try his enemies. Find out who might have had an urge to kill him, will you?
It's a tall order, Johnny. There may be a lot of people involved.
I can use them all, Father.
I know. But can they all use an electric toaster?
When I left Father Leahy, I knew I still had one base to tag. It was Sutro's ex-flame, a doll named Evelyn Day. I drove down to Eddy Street and I parked near the Jade Club. Well, it's not a bad place, but on a slow night, even the winos are afraid to go in. Inside, it was dark enough to hide the decimal point on a check, and over by the bar, there was a piano playing music that nobody was listening to. Then Evelyn came out. And right off, she started hunting for the nearest fire exit. She had red hair about this side of 98 degrees. She wore a black evening gown that held up by one snap and a prayer. She was the kind of a girl who could wear a Mother Hubbard and make it look like a negligee. And when she sang, it came out low enough to strike oil. After she was through, I asked the bartender to give her a message. She walked over to me, and she wasn't happy one way or the other.
Are you the man who wanted me?
One of them. You're Evelyn, huh?
Yeah. What'll it lead to?
A crisis if you don't sit down.
All right. You've got me interested. Now, what's on your mind that we can talk about?
My name's Madero. Now, let's start with a friend named Pete Sutro.
Let's continue. What do you want to know about him?
Where is he?
Are you a cop, or will you pay for the right answer?
I need too many of them, baby. I'm way out ahead in a murder derby, and I'll pitch homicide anybody I can get.
What do you want Sutro for?
I think he shot Marty Kane.
Someone should have. But you're betting on the wrong horse.
You're prejudiced. Sutro was your boyfriend.
That's right. He was my boyfriend. But I haven't seen him lately.
All right, then. What was the last thing you did with him?
I'll read my diary to you someday.
Now, look, baby, you got a choice. I'm going to rough you up or let the pros do it.
Let go of my armadero. Or I'll call a bouncer.
Call Sutro. Now, start talking before I bruise you up good.
Slow down, Madero. You're out of my weight class.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what you want to know.
Should I take notes, or is this going to be quick?
I don't know. Depends on how sentimental I get.
That's all right. I got a handkerchief.
Okay, I'll tell you. I used to be Pete Sutro's girl in Detroit. Then one day he skipped out and left me hanging on the vine.
Don't worry, baby. You haven't withered yet.
I started looking for him, and so did Kane.
Why Kane?
He and Pete had a deal together. Pete ran out with all the dough.
Your boy should have run for Congress. He's got a nice record. What kind of a deal did he have with Kane?
I don't remember.
All of a sudden, huh?
I'm shy when it comes to strangers. Let's just end it by saying Pete disappeared.
Let's say you're dummying up.
I love Pete, and I wouldn't want anything to happen to him.
Do you carry a picture with that torch, baby?
Sure. Want to see? Here's a snapshot of Pete in my locket. Do you know him?
Not this season, no.
I want him back. He was a good guy.
Yeah, your boy worked up a lot of people. He made number one nightmare for a guy named Nat Finley.
I heard. And I want to see Finley, too.
You saw me, miss. But I want to talk to Madero.
Hello, Finley.
I got to see you alone, Madero. And I got to see you now.
You lost your option. I'm freelancing again.
Well, you can't walk out on me.
This is going to hurt, fella. Your wife paid me to drop the job.
That's what I got to talk to you about, Madero. I think she wants to drop me, too.
Finley grabbed me by the arm, and you could tell he was scared. His jaw was shut tighter than a wall safe, and his Adam's apple rode up and down like a yo-yo. Evelyn wanted to compare notes with him on Sutro, but right now Finley was as friendly as a no-limit poker game. He hustled me out of the Jade and into a waiting cab. He wouldn't say anything because of the driver, so he sat in one corner, rubbing his hands and looking straight ahead. When we got to the office, Finley paid the bill, and we went up the ramp. Inside, he had a little trouble getting started, like a big family leaving on a picnic. And then he got his voice.
I'm in a bad spot, Madero. I need help.
Have you tried classified?
I'm trying new. I tell you, my wife's out to get me. She keeps telling me I'm crazy. She's trying to talk me into it.
A lot of wives feel that way, Finley. She'll get over it.
Yeah? Well, I'm Adele. She's trying to send me to an asylum. She and Sutro.
You got enough worries to start a peace conference. What brings Sutro back into the headlines?
I found a letter in Sheila's purse. Kane wanted $10,000 from Sheila to keep quiet about Sutro.
All right, quit crowding me with ghosts. So your wife had a past.
And she and Sutro have a future unless you help them. Help me, I tell you. I tell you, Sutro's behind the whole thing. He and my wife must know each other, and they're trying to get rid of me.
You're getting a complex, Finley. Slow down.
Well, you gotta help me.
Well, who's gonna help me? I got a murder rap to beat.
Oh, but I'll clear you, Madera. I'll clear you if you help me now.
You couldn't clear your own throat in an empty tunnel. What makes you 8 feet tall?
This gun in my hand.
Oh, stop pointing it, fella. You're too nervous to aim.
Well, you don't understand, Madera. I'm not pointing it at you. I'm giving it to you. This is the gun that killed Kane.
You were there when it happened?
No, but either my wife or Sutro was.
When did you dream that up?
An hour ago. I found it in my wife's closet. Two slugs are missing, and I got a feeling it killed Kane.
Send it to homicide. They'll let you know who did it by return mail.
I can't, Madero. I can't just yet. I don't know whether Sheila or Sutro did it. I got a feeling inside. You've got to find Sutro or he'll end up killing me yet.
That's a prediction?
Wait a minute. Someone's coming down the hall. Hide the gun, Madero. They're after me now.
Yeah.
They got the light fuse.
Lay low. They're aiming for something bigger.
What are you going to do, Madero?
Just waiting for something to happen.
Madero. Madero. I guess it happened.
Somebody turned a flashlight in my eyes and then hit a four-bagger. If they hung around, they could have seen me do a couple of quick quivers a chorus girl would have been proud of. I laid there in the dark for a while. If you're going to look messy, a blackout isn't a bad place to do it. After a while, I tried to get up, but my stomach felt as empty as a horse lap at a funeral. I sprawled out again, and I tried to figure how a name like Pete Sutro could start so much pain. Then the lights went on. They should have stayed off, because Warcheck was breathing over me like a steam engine with a broken heart.
Hello, Madero. Does the light bother your eyes?
Yeah, Warcheck. Get out of it.
And get used to it. It's a lot stronger down at headquarters. Tell me about the gun on the floor.
I heard you were coming. I wanted to commit suicide.
You didn't try hard enough. Just got a phone tip that said you had the gun that killed Marty Kane. Hand it to me.
All right, copper, I'll make it easy for you. Finley left the gun here before somebody sapped me.
Mm-hmm. Who's somebody? Don't any of your friends have names?
Sure. Check with Finley. He was here when it happened.
It was dark, Mado. How did he see? With an electric eye?
I don't know. Maybe he smelled his wife's perfume. Look her up, too.
She's that interesting, huh?
Kane used to think so.
What do you mean?
He was blackmailing her.
Look, Mado, a grocery list is blackmailed to you. I'll put you on the inside.
Finley found a letter in her purse. Kane wanted $10,000 to keep quiet about Sutro.
Finley told you all about it, huh?
He can't keep a family secret.
And the wife tumbled Kane to keep him quiet. Is that the idea?
Well, this is your good day, Warcheck. Find Sutro now, and you've licked the whole thing.
No, you find him, Madero, and we'll give you a reward.
You're too generous. What's the pitch?
Sutro's wanted for a payroll robbery in Detroit. He's been out of sight for a year now.
He hasn't been out of mind, though. Finley thinks his wife is carrying on a sideline with him.
Look, Madero, I talked to your boy, Finley. He's got enough dreams to start a mattress factory. I don't believe him. I don't believe you.
You don't believe the world is round. Take stock, Warcheck, and start learning.
Yeah, I will. I will. Let's see how much the fingerprints on this gun teach me. If you've got a story, I'll stay after school.
You'll still wear the dunce cap.
That's all right, Madero. There'll be a badge on it.
Warcheck wrapped the gun up in a handkerchief, and if it killed Marty Kane, I might as well start writing letters to the governor. The gun was a plant, but I had about as much chance of selling that to Warcheck as a pair of short pants to a reform school. Warcheck stood there and smiled, and then he walked out. Ah, there were a lot of questions again, like who sapped me, and did Finley really have a story? The more I thought about it, the more snarled it got, and then the phone rang. Yeah.
Hello, Johnny. This is Father Leahy. Are you still free?
Yeah, but I'm breathing hard. How'd you make out?
Fine, Johnny. I sold 10 raffle tickets.
What'd you find out?
Warcheck just got a teletype. Sutro pulled a payroll robbery in Detroit. They think Marty Kane helped him.
Well, that figures. What else?
Sutro and the Doe are supposed to be somewhere in town.
Yeah, even the bloodhounds are worried. How does Sheila figure?
She and a girl named Evelyn were both in love with Sutro. But rumor has it that Sutro's favorite was Evelyn.
What about Finley?
Sheila must have got tired of sharecropping, so she settled for Finley. They both came in from Detroit about a year ago.
But, Father, it's still fuzzy. Marty Kane was blackmailing Sheila because of Sutro. There must be a tie.
Evelyn's asking the same question, and she thinks Sheila knows the answers. She's on her way to the Findlay place for a showdown.
Thanks, Father. I'll tag along and grab a seat on the sidelines.
It'll be a free-for-all if those two girls tangle.
Don't worry, Father. They won't get in my hair.
Don't be too sure. Samson had trouble with one girl.
When Father Leahy hung up, all the pieces began to fall into place. All but one. Where was Sutro? He was around somewhere, but it was like throwing a headlock on a shadow. I grabbed a cab out to the Stafford Arms, and when I got there, the doorman looked at me as if I'd just blown up an orphan. I took the elevator and got off on the sixth floor. Then I leaned on the doorbell, and Sheila answered. She was wearing a pair of rose-colored lounging pajamas, and I've seen baked potatoes with looser jackets. She must have been surprised, but she didn't blink an eyelash.
Are you pausing or opposing, Mr. Madero?
I'm looking for trap doors.
Oh, well, if you're going to look that way, come inside.
Yeah.
Now bring that gleam in your eye over to the fireplace. We'll warm it up a little.
It won't look good in company.
Why? Who's company?
Evelyn's a little late. She got tied up sharpening her claws.
Evelyn who?
Hold out, baby. She's got a better question than that.
Like what?
Like, where's Pete Sutro? That key sounds like a friend.
That's too early. That's probably my husband, Matt.
Oh, hello, Madero. I'm glad you're here. Somebody's been following me.
Oh, you're dreaming again, darling.
You see? What did I tell you? It wasn't a dream. That must be her.
Hello, Sheila. Remember me?
You must have the wrong place, lady.
That's the right idea. I want Pete Sutro back.
You want too much.
I'll grab anyway. I've come for Pete, Sheila.
You came too late. He's dead. Pete Sutro died 2 years ago in Detroit. Do you hear me? He's dead.
Not dead enough. You're lying, Sheila. Pete Sutro is standing right behind you.
What do you mean? That's my husband. That's Nat.
So you gave him another name and another face. But you can't give him another voice. That's Pete Sutro.
What are you talking about? What are you saying? I'm not Pete Sutro.
Don't you remember me, Pete? I'm Evelyn. Oh, what did they do to your face, darling?
My face? I was in an accident. It's hard to remember things.
Remember the payroll robbery, Pete? You were supposed to come back to me.
Payroll robbery? There was an accident. I was hurt. I can't remember anything else. It's so hard to think. Well, you were there, Sheila. What happened?
Go ahead, Sheila. Tell him what happened. Tell him that he's Pete Sutro. Tell him that you stole him from me. Tell him that you killed Marty Kane.
All right, Evelyn. I'll tell it to you first. It was a good campaign, but I'm voting you dumb.
Put away
now.
The gun. He won't stand
here. He's henpecked now.
What are you doing, Sheila? You'll hurt him.
I'll try.
You shot him. You shot... Evelyn.
Pete. You remember me? She broke us up. For good.
But you remembered me. Yeah, I remembered. Evelyn. I'm beginning to remember a lot of things now.
Then forget them, Ned. Just you and me now. We're married.
You are. You married a guy named Nat Finley.
Stay away from me, Nat. Nat.
Try Pete. See how it sounds.
Give
me the gun, baby.
Let go.
You killed Evelyn.
Let go. You didn't need her.
Not anymore. I got the gun now.
No, please, Nat. Please.
Tell me it's a dream, baby. Tell me I'm crazy.
You are, Nat. You are. Get out of my way. I'm getting out of here.
You're not quick enough.
The gun's empty now.
Yeah. So's everything. I'm tired, Nadeo. Tired.
Hold out. It's going to be a long trip.
Yeah. I told you, Madero. Pete Sutro was going to kill me in the end.
Yeah. You talked yourself into it. Warchek got the whole story the next morning. Seems that Sutro and Kane were in a big robbery in Detroit. The plan was for Sutro to carry all the dough and meet Kane and Evelyn at their hideout. But Sutro got smashed up in an auto accident and never made it. Sutro's face had to be remodeled, and when he lost his memory, Sheila made her pitch. She promoted a wedding and cut herself in on half the stolen cash. changed his name to Nat Finley and brought him out to San Francisco. Kane and Evelyn got wind that Sutro had taken off for the coast, so they followed. They couldn't find him, and for a year, Sheila and Sutro got along without a hitch. And then Sutro began hearing his real name in his own mind, and before Sheila could do anything, I'd already shown her husband's check to Kane. He recognized Sutro's handwriting right away, and so he started to blackmail Sheila. He didn't make any yardage because Sheila stopped him with a .38. And then she tried to convince her husband that he was crazy. Evelyn won in the last round when she recognized Sutro's voice at the Jade. Turned out that Sutro had been chasing himself until he caught himself. Well, Warchek asked only one question. How can a guy forget his own name? I don't know. A lot of hotels would like to know that, too.
How do you dispose of cigarettes?
Well, this part of plants.
Really? Fertilizer and dried plant roots can catch fire.
Trash cans okay?
Please. All that trash can easily catch fire.
So off my porch is a bad idea.
Cigarettes tossed into mulch, leaves, and grass start many fires. Fire can grow up the side of a building before anyone notices.
Fine. Bucket of sand?
That's perfect. Put it out. All the way. Every time. To learn more, go to mass.gov/DFS.
Right. We heard Jack Webb is Johnny Madero, and Johnny Madero Pier 23, who is with an original air date of the 19th of June 1947. Yes, before Johnny Madero, Jack Webb had a show called Pat Novak for Hire, followed by Johnny Madero and then Jeff Reagan, Private Investigator, before he would go on in 1948 to be Sergeant Friday in Dragnet. My name is Arthur, and you've been listening to The Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org, Medford Tufts Freeform Radio. New spring schedule's out, so I'm going to have a show following mine. So I'm going to go ahead and play out the next installment here. I'm going to do another Adventures in Research. This one is titled The Rain Wizard, with an original air date of the 28th of January, 1947. Thanks for listening.
Adventures in Research.
Feel that drop of rain? There's another. And another. Yes, sir, he's done it again. When it comes to breaking a drought, that man's a regular wizard.
This is Paul Shannon transcribing another fascinating tale of science. And here to tell the story is Dr. Phillips Thomas, research engineer of the Westinghouse Research Laboratories.
Thank you, Paul. Hello, everyone. I've called our story for today, The Rain Wizard. Ever hear of a comparatively new science called climatology? It was born of a wartime need to project weather conditions weeks, even months ahead, a long-range weather study. Think what that means to the farmer today, being able to look ahead and plan his crops, backed in his planning by such a science as climatology. But the farmers didn't have the benefit of climatology a generation ago. It would have meant a lot to America's great corn belt in those early years. To Joshua Layden, Nebraska farmer, walking through his cornfield with an acre.
It's too much for a man to stand, I tell you. Lord knows we're used to droughts and we take them as they come. But this is...
This is the worst we've ever had, Josh, and that's a fact. Don't show any signs of breaking, either. That sun's as hot as all get out.
It ain't enough that we got the cutworm and the corn borer and wind and hail and everything else that comes along. No, that ain't enough. We got to stand by and watch our corn crop burn to a crisp. Look at it.
Mine's the same way, Josh. Burned up, acres of it. Don't know what we're going to do for money this year, Josh. Fine crop we had, too. A fine crop. Now look at it. Every ear's about to wither up. There'll be nothing left if this keeps up, not even for the hogs.
Yeah, it takes the heart clean out of a man to see good corn dying for want of rain. You know, I'd give anything for a little...
Say, I just happened to think. That rainmaker fella's due in tomorrow. Maybe if enough of us can raise the money...
Sure. Maybe we can make a deal with him. Now, let's get the neighbors together and meet him at the depot. Have a talk with him. I was worried so much I clean forgot about the rainmaker.
All right, Josh. I'll round up the neighbors and see you at the depot. That's his boxcar. They're going to put it on the siding. Let's head over that way, Josh.
You know, I'd sure like to know the secret these fellas have. How they can make rain.
Save us a heap of money if we didn't know. But try and find out. Never seen such a close-mouthed fellow as this one.
Well, after all, Sam, that's the way he makes his living. Oh, here's the boxcar.
He's got a rope around it, too. No chance of getting too close. Smart man, all right.
Well, let's have a talk with him, see what we can do, Sam. Now, you're the spokesman for all of us. Uh-oh, here he comes now.
Oh, gentlemen, Shadwell's the name, Daniel B. Shadwell. And judging from the acres and acres of dying corn I see all around me, I haven't arrived any too soon.
That's right, Mr. Shadwell. We sure do need your services as a rainmaker.
What?
I'm Sam Welker, spokesman for every farmer hereabouts. First, we want to know how much you charge to make rain for us.
Well, Mr. Welker, I have a system of making rain that never fails. It's been successful in almost every section of the country. So I work on one basis only. No rain, no pay.
Now, suits us. How about it, men? Okay, you've got yourself a job, mister. When can you start? We need that rain off of bed.
Start? Why, right away, of course. Suppose we work out a few details, though. I'd like to get my charges straightened out before I go to work.
Well, Josh, looks as though everybody's here. Ain't seen such a crowd since the big fair.
Say, do you think this fella Shadwell can make it rain?
I was talking to him just before you came, Josh. Has quite a system, all right.
Yeah.
See the windows cut in the boxcar?
Yeah. You mean the front end of the boxcar?
No, that end's where he sleeps. The other end's where he keeps all his chemicals and gases and the like. Stuff he uses to make it rain.
Well, how's gas going to make it rain, Sam?
I don't know. Shadwell claims it does. Says the gas goes up in the sky and mixes with the rain clouds and forces the raindrops down.
But, Sam, there ain't a rain cloud in the sky.
Shadwell claims there is, but you can't see him. But the gas he makes can reach him. That's all I know.
Well, I reckon he knows what he's doing. Oh, there's Shadwell now, climbing up on the roof of the car. Say, what's he doing?
Quiet. He's studying the sky, doing some tall figuring, maybe. Oh, now he's coming down, going back in the boxcar.
Yeah, it sure is all far and mysterious the way these fellas work.
You ask me, the whole thing's a fake.
Oh, this fella Shadwell ain't no fake. He's got to produce rain or he don't get paid. That's our agreement.
Say, Sam, what's that funny smell?
That's the gas I was telling you about. See it coming out of the hole in the top of the car?
Sure is hard on the nose. But if that's what it takes to make rain, I guess we can stand it. Yeah. How long do you reckon it'll take, Sam?
I don't know, Josh. Shadwell didn't set no time limit. Maybe it'll take the rest of the day, or it might be tomorrow. Can't tell.
Well, Martha, it's just about bedtime, and I don't see no signs of rain. Scarcely a breeze outside. Appears to me this fellow Shadwell made a bad bargain this time. Oh, well. May as well try to get some sleep. Maybe by the... Hear that? I'd have sworn I heard... It's come! Hey, Martha, Johnny, come quick! Listen to the rain! Our crops are saved! It's raining! I never thought rain would ever sound like music to a hard-bitten farmer like me. But it sure does. Yes, sir. Martha, you can have that new dress you've been hankering for now.
Mr. Shadwell, I've been asked to speak for everybody here at this meeting and give you our thanks for saving our crops and keeping us all out of the poorhouse. You've kept your part of the bargain, and now we're keeping our part of it. $500. Here you are, Mr. Shadwell.
Thanks, men. I take it you're all satisfied with the result.
We're more than satisfied, ain't we, man?
Yeah, we certainly
are. Yes, sir. If it hadn't been for you, a lot of us here at this meeting would have been looking the other way every time we met anybody from the bank. I know I would.
Well, I'm obliged to you, gentlemen. Does my heart good to know that you all place so much confidence in my ability to make rain.
Never had a speck of doubt myself.
No, me neither. But there was a couple of fellas that, well, they didn't exactly say it in so many words, but...
They thought I was a fake, is that it? Well, I've heard some of the remarks myself, but in my business, there's only one answer to that situation. Produce rain.
You sure did that all right.
Yes, but being a rainmaker isn't all play, you know. It's a lot of hard work. Making rain isn't a profession you can learn overnight.
Yes, there's more to it than meets the eye.
You bet there is. To be a rainmaker, you've got to know the signs and read them right. You've got to know all kinds of weather firsthand. Then you've got to know just how much chemical to use and how far up it has to go. Things like that. I tell you, gents, it takes a heap of figuring. A heap of figuring. Well, I'll be on my way, and thank you.
Took a heap of showmanship, too, to be a good rainmaker. There were skeptics who said that rainmakers had access to weather forecasts, that they wouldn't accept a job for a certain day unless they'd seen the forecast. Sometimes things went wrong in spite of the heap of figuring. Old-timers will recall a man by the name of Rainmaker Hatfield. He had quite a reputation out California way. Not so long ago, a drought hit California. In one section, a city council decided to break the dry spell, sent for Rainmaker Hatfield, and asked him what he could do.
Well, gentlemen, I've studied your problem, and I can make you three propositions. Take any of them you want.
What'll they cost us?
Just, I'll come to that in a minute. Now, here are the three plans. First, I'll fill up your reservoir for you.
Yeah?
Second proposition, I'll produce up to 30 inches of rain without charge.
Well, now, that's
but,
certainly
But my
right.
charge will be $500 an inch over that. And third, I'll deliver 40 inches of rain free of charge, with a charge of $1,000 for every inch over the 40. Well, now, there you are, gentlemen. Take your choice.
The city council was pretty desperate, but also cagey. They accepted Hatfield's proposition and neglected intentionally to mention which of the offers they were accepting. Hatfield went right to work. At the Moreno Dam near San Diego, he set up his towers.
All right, men. Careful those boxes now. Don't drop them or we'll be delayed a week or more. Is that all of them? All right. That's all, men. I said, that's all, men. What are you waiting for?
We kind of figured maybe we could watch you go about making rain. Got any objections, mister?
Yes, sir. I work alone, and I don't allow anyone to watch me work. It disturbs me. And I need to concentrate. You'll have to leave right away. I've got work to do.
Hatfield got right to work and sent up his gases. In practically no time at all, the rain came. Once started, the rain came down in buckets, 35 inches of it, creating quite a few problems.
My house is flooded. Shut this rain off.
Hundreds of dollars worth of merchandise ruined in my store.
Who's going to pay for flood damage to my property? You and city council responsible for this rain. I'm going to sue unless you shut it off immediately.
Shut it off.
Shut it off. Mr. Hatfield, you've ruined the whole district.
But, gentlemen, you wanted rain, didn't you? That's what I came here to produce.
Yes, but we didn't order this much rain. The whole city's up in arms. Why, man, this isn't a rain, it's a flood. It's costing people thousands of dollars.
And just what do you expect me to do about it?
Do? Why, shut it off, of course. You started it. It's up to you to control it. Shut it off.
Gentlemen, I'm a rainmaker, not a rain stopper.
You mean to stand there and say you won't shut off this rain?
Well, it isn't that I won't, gentlemen. It's just that I can't. You asked for rain, and I've given it to you.
Then by thunder...
I've filled my end of the bargain. Now it's up to you to live up to your end. Here's my bill. Includes expenses.
$10,000! We won't pay it. Not one cent of it. We didn't order this much rain, and we refuse to pay.
Very well, gentlemen, we shall see. I shall put the matter up to the city attorney.
That's agreeable with us. We'll leave it to the city attorney. And if he says we should pay this bill, it shall be paid.